Welcome to Let's Talk Micro. Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods. Whatever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. And as far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza. And I am also on Blue Sky Social, which I'm very happy. You know, I have been in it for a while, but now we are seeing this exodus from X to Blue Sky, and I'm seeing a lot of the community from infectious diseases and microbiology. So I'm very happy to see them there. I also have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any suggestions, any feedback. You know, they are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And as you know, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors, so if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via a Venmo link or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI, both links available on the show notes. And if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com. and the Learn Antibiotics book, available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. And of course, if you haven't listened to the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was the next episode on the AMR series with Andrea Princi, and it was about glycopeptides and what big drug in this group, it's vancomycin. And of course, as is customary with this type of episode, we always have a guest, so we dive into glycopeptides. We talk about things like, you know, mechanism of action, organisms that, you know, has activity against, intrinsic resistance. So all in all, it was a great episode, so definitely check it out if you haven't already. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about today's episode. So it is about antibiotics in a way, but it's not part of the AMR series, and it was about an article that I read titled NDM producing E. coli harboring PBP insert variants emerges as new threat. And this was published in Contagion Live in August 28th of 2024, and the authors are Ranin Palota and Samuel Aitken, and they are both ID pharmacists. And in the episode, I am joined by Ranin Palota. She's an ID pharmacist at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. And in the episode, we start with an overview of beta-lactamases, beta-lactams. You know, we talk about the different classes, you know, from the Ambler classification system, A, B, C, D. We talk about penicillin binding proteins. And in the episode, she talks about NDM, which is New Delhi metallo-beta-lactamase. And more specifically about this article, and she talks about NDM5, which is the variant of NDM. And this particular NDM5, which is a variant, it actually, you know, that it was seen in E. coli, in a particular strain of E. coli, you know, it has some PB3 variants, and it also has like a transferable AMC, which confers it resistance to Aeternum avivactam, which that is definitely worrisome. And those of you that are microbiologists and you know that the NDM enzyme, you know, it inactivates a lot of the beta-lactam drugs. But however, Aeternum has activity against NDM. So having a variant that can cause resistance to Aeternum, you know, is definitely worrisome. So it was a great conversation with Dr. Palota. And we also talk about some of the challenges for drug development, and, you know, we gave our thoughts. So all in all, a great episode. So let's go ahead and listen to it. So those of you that are regular listeners, you know that as part of the Let's Talk Micro podcast, we have an AMR series where we kind of break down antibiotics and we go over mechanism of actions and things like that. And recently I was reading this article that it was titled, it was published actually in Contagion Live, and I put the link in the show notes. But it was titled NDM producing E. coli harboring PBP insert variants emerges as a new threat. I read it. It looked very interesting. So I reached out to the author. And today she is here with me to do an episode. And we're going to talk a little bit about NDM and go over some things. So with me today, I have Ranin Palota. Ranin Palota, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, so thanks for inviting me. But I guess I'll start with an introduction of myself. So hi everyone. I'm Renine Pallotta. I'm an infectious diseases pharmacist at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. I specialize in immunocompromised ID and antimicrobial stewardship. I'm originally from Michigan. I'm a huge sports fan, so go Lions. I completed my pharmacy school at Northeast Ohio Medical University, followed by a PGY1 and PGY2 in infectious diseases at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Dr. Sam Aiken and I wrote this article about NDM that prompted this podcast. So I have to shout out Sam because he's incredible. But I'm happy to be here.
Definitely happy to have you, and thank you for accepting the invitation. And even though I haven't met him, but shout out to Sam as well for helping with this article as well. So, and for the listeners, I really invite you to listen to episode 101, which is talking AMR beta lactams. We go into a little bit more detail as microbiology, especially you're working in the lab, and you have so many terms, and sometimes especially when you're starting and you're learning, you hear terms like PVP. Beta-lactamases, beta-lactam. It's like, which one is which? And sometimes, getting everything straight in your head, it can be a little challenging. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So we're going to start talking about beta-lactams, and we went over in the episode. But, this is a group of antibiotics, that their mechanism of action is, they inhibit the cell wall synthesis, and they have a beta-lactam ring. And to this group, some of the most common antibiotics that are used, you have your cephalosporins, you have your carbapenems, you have your penicillins. So definitely those of you that work in the lab, you're familiar with them. So we hear the term beta-lactamases. So now I wanted to ask you, can you talk more a little bit about beta-lactamases?
So beta-lactamases are essentially enzymes that are produced by bacteria that break open that beta-lactam ring of antibiotics. So it essentially just inactivates those beta-lactam antibiotics. And there's many different types and flavors of beta-lactamases, which are most commonly grouped into four classes. And if you were at ID Week a couple weeks ago, you heard Dr. Robert Bonomo say that it's very simple. You just need to remember A, B, C, D. But it's not that simple, but those are kind of the classes. So class A is going to include your ESBLs. Class B is going to include these metallo beta-lactamases that we'll dive into a little bit more detail of NDMs. Class C includes your AMPCs, and then class D includes some of the OXAs.
Yeah, and we were briefly talking about it before we started recording, and I didn't have the chance to attend this year. I only had to, I kind of have to pick my conferences, so I went to ASM Microbe, and I'm gonna try to see if I can make both next year. But however, if anyone in the audience is listening and you want to sponsor this podcast, I'll definitely be happy to do that, and I can attend as many conferences, which is something that I really enjoy because I find some great content, I learn a lot, and I meet some great people. I just want to circle back something before we continue. You mentioned the Lions, and I think this year I really started following football, and I've been watching some of their games, and I really like how they play. So it's a pretty good team.
They're a fun team. We jokingly say this might cause some people to stop the episode, but we jokingly say that the Lions are America's new team. So it's no longer the Cowboys. But we welcome all fans.
Definitely. And please, if you're thinking about stopping, listening, don't. Maybe just finish the episode and then maybe comment on social media if you want. But I really want you to enjoy this content. This is a great topic because I'm actually, I'm going through my master's, and that's I'm one of the, my last project I'm working on that. So I definitely recently have been getting very familiar with the classes, and I really enjoy learning about it. And I mean, maybe sometimes as part of the scope of my job, learning that much in detail. I mean, sometimes it might not really be that essential to the job, but it's definitely really important to have that understanding because depending on, the understanding how the antibiotics and, some have activity against certain enzymes. So it's that's definitely important to learn. So can you talk a little bit more about NDM?
So NDM stands for New Delhi Metallo Beta-Lactamase. So this is a type of carbapenemase. It was first identified in a Swedish patient of Indian origin who traveled to India in 2008, hence the name. So we have to give some historical context here. But again, it's part of that metallo beta-lactamase family. And this truly is the super bug. So by 2015, medical experts had detected NDM in more than 70 countries worldwide. The first organism with NDM was actually Club Pneumo. And since then, NDM genes have been identified in a variety of different bacteria that include Acinetobacter, Pseudomonas, but probably most commonly seen is going to be E. coli. But what makes NDM particularly problematic is its ability to hydrolyze a wide range of beta-lactam antibiotics, include some of which that we consider our last resort antibiotics. So again, kind of highlighting that it is such a super bug, it's very difficult to treat and it's continuing to grow worldwide.
Definitely. And sometimes, I mentioned this to the audience, but yeah, we do see more cases and we always understand the seriousness of it, of course, and thinking on the patient's side and having, this type of infections. And but the scientists, in US, you're learning and you find it sometimes, really cool when you encounter things that are unusual. And I remember that once upon a time, maybe all you were seeing here a lot of what's like KPCs, and then we're seeing more, and based on, it's just I just find it fascinating. But yeah, it definitely from what I we'll talk more about that. I was gonna ask about the beta lactams, and you mentioned that. But one thing, right, that astrinum, it actually it has activity against the this enzyme, right?
Yeah, so that is somewhat unique. So NDMs hydrolyze your penicillin, cephalosporins, carbapenems, but not estrinam. And we'll kind of come back to this concept as well when we chat about penicillin binding proteins, but as a higher level concept of what's going on is essentially that all of those antibiotics are not active, but estrinam would be with NDM. But the problem is that estrinam can be hydrolyzed by other beta-lactamases that are often co-produced by NDM organisms. So NDMs often have either ESBLs, KPCs, OXO48-like enzymes, where estrinam would no longer be able to work. So how do you get around that? You essentially combined estrinam with something else, like avibactam, which would allow for estrinam to do its job.
Correct. And as far as are there any other antibiotics that might have activity against this? I mean, we definitely, you talked about the effect that it has in all the other beta lactams, and definitely you mentioned estrinam. Anything else?
Yeah, so the IDSA has a great guidance document on this. So it's the treatment of antimicrobial resistance of gram-negative infections, where they do recommend that combination of ceftazidime-avibactam plus estrinam infused together at the same time. So again, you want that avibactam to allow for estrinam to do its job. And the ceftazidime is basically there for fun. It's just along for the ride. But another option would be cefiderocol as monotherapy. So cefiderocol kind of has a fun mechanism of action. It's a novel cephalosporin. It's actively transported into bacterial cells through the outer membrane via the bacterial ion transports and by passive diffusion through porin channels. So once it gets across that outer membrane, it disassociates from the iron molecule and then it binds to our penicillin binding protein, which then, of course, interrupts the cell wall synthesis. So, because it's using that iron transport system, you'll hear people call this the Trojan horse of antibiotics. So, those are going to be your two guideline recommendations for treating NDM. So, ceftazidime-avibactam plus estrinam or monotherapy of cefiderocol. But I will highlight that there is some emerging resistance to these frontline treatment options, which pose a growing threat in managing NDM-producing organisms, which then complicates things. But there was a great article published in BMC Microbiology by Khan and colleagues in 2017, so nearly 7 years ago. But even then, they highlighted that NDM is becoming a public health threat and discussed some of the genetic variability that can lead to resistance.
Wow, definitely. And maybe those of you that work in the lab, and maybe you have seen that sometimes, especially if, like, we do at my facility, if we have an organism that has an NDM, then we actually, we do a synergy with ceftazidime, avibactam, and then estrinam, and then so you test estrinam by itself, and then you do the synergy, and then you report that result, and we do that. So now maybe as you're listening to this, it's making a little more sense as to why you might be doing that in the lab. So as far as, we kind of started touching on penicillin binding proteins. Can you talk more about that?
Yes. So penicillin binding proteins are enzymes that are essential for bacterial wall synthesis. So specifically in the final steps of that peptidoglycan cross-linking. So this process is crucial for maintaining the cell wall's integrity, which helps to protect the bacteria. So your penicillin binding proteins vary in their roles, and there is a wide range of them, but I'd say probably the more crucial ones are going to be PBP1A and PBP1B, which participate in cell lysis. Then you also have PBP2, which inhibition causes halts cell division. And then lastly, you have PBP3, which inhibition essentially arrests cell division, which causes filamentation. So inhibition of one or more of those penicillin binding proteins can lead to cell death, and which makes them an appealing choice for drug development. But beta-lactam antibiotics, like our penicillin, cephalosporins, those all target penicillin binding proteins. So it binds irreversibly to our PBPs, inhibiting their activity. What else can I say? Oh, I guess one other thing is that they do vary in like what PBP that they want to attract essentially. So cephalosporins preferentially target PBP3s and PBP1A, whereas TreeNAM binds exclusively to PBP2, PBP3, and PBP4. And this is like very detailed, where it might go over some people's heads, which is totally fine. But I think the discussion is going to be like when we get into the nitty-gritty of resistance, it's important to know where the drug is binding to understand where that resistance mechanism is impacting.
Definitely. And I think I was reading that sometimes, and an organism can actually have more than one of these PVPs, right? They can have multiple.
Yeah, there's a ton of like information on PBPs and that go into even more in depth of their roles with the bacteria and how it impacts their cross-linking as well. So I don't know, very interesting and why it's such an important target for drug development.
Okay, and as I was reading in the article, I'm going to ask you about NDM5, and as those of you that work in the lab, right, you do testing for these carbapenemases, and you only are testing, five, but that doesn't mean they're not the only ones. There are some other variants. In this case, it was very interesting reading about NDM5. So, can you talk more about NDM5 and how does it affect the activity of certain antimicrobials?
Yeah, so there's actually 24 NDM variants that have been identified in over 60 species of 11 different bacterial families, which is crazy to even think about that there's so many different variants. But several of those variants actually have enhanced carbapenemase activity. So Club Pneumo and E. coli are basically your predominant carriers of NDM. But again, I'll refer listeners to some of the papers about different NDM organisms because this is truly where the microbiologists are the experts in the field in understanding all of the different variants. But there are some incredible studies published that have shown these different amino acid insertions affecting susceptibility. So with NDM5 specifically, looking at those producing E. coli bacteria that have PBP3 variants, which, spoiler alert, would impact S. TreeNAM. So that's kind of why I was going into depth with that. So they specifically have a YRIN or YRK insertions, and these are all amino acid insertions. But these insertions are increasingly prevalent worldwide and account for nearly a quarter of the NDM producing E. coli in India. Additionally, these E. coli bacteria that carry those PBP3 variants also harbor variants of CMY42. So this is a transferable AMP-C enzyme. So together, these mechanisms lead to dramatically increased MICs for both S. TreeNAM, avibactam as a combination, or and for cefiderocol. So Sadek and colleagues wrote a great paper on this as well, and I highly recommend listeners to check that one out as well. But they completed whole genome sequencing of 19 NDM-producing E. coli isolates that had high MICs for S. TreeNAM or avibactam combination. And all of those isolates had either that YRIK or YRN insertion. And additionally, each isolate also carried that plasmin-borne CMY beta-lactamase gene. Most commonly was seen was that CMY42. And the MIC of Aztreonam avibactam was actually fourfold higher in that CMY42 producing isolates. So essentially, throwing out all of our frontline treatment options at this point for these specific organisms carrying that PB3 variant, which was specific to that NDM5 organism. So the super bug of the super bugs.
Well, when you were mentioning, all the variants, I remember when I like years ago I was in the lab and we were doing a validation for the CARBAR test from bio from Cepheid. And I remember about, at that point in time, I was fairly new in my training and I just started learning about all this. And I remember when, like, we got some samples from the AR isolate bank, which we actually did an episode here in the podcast. But I remember seeing all those isolates and all the, all the genes that they had, and I don't know, I just found it like a little mind blowing. I mean, here you are, you're testing this five here, but you have this many variants out there. I mean, not only for NDM, like you said, but yeah, we do. We have all this for KPC, we know for OXA and all the other ones. So I don't know, something that just came to mind as you were talking. So you mentioned, right, that the PBP mutations are challenging when it comes to drug development. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to answer really about like PBP mutations and why they would be challenging in drug development because it seems like it's hard to get anything into drug development for ID related things. So shameless plug to anybody in drug development, we need more drugs. I feel like ID is often left out. Meanwhile, my colleagues in, hem-onc are getting all the new and exciting things, but back to the question that you asked, I think PBP mutations are challenging in drug development for several reasons, just because of, one, the impact on the drug target. So unlike your beta-lactamase mediated resistance, where, if you have something that's inhibiting that, it can restore the activity of that beta-lactam antibiotic, PBP mutations alter the drug target itself. So you'd have to come up with a completely new target. And then there's, different bacterial strains that can harbor various PBP mutations that configure resistance to specific beta-lactam antibiotics. So that diversity also complicates the development of antibiotics. And then there's just evolving resistance, right? So bacteria can rapidly evolve, leading to new PBP mutations that can render existing antibiotics that might work now ineffective. So this ongoing evolution kind of shows the need for continuous research and drug development efforts to keep up with emerging resistant patterns. And these factors make it overall difficult to, find new effective targets for PBP mutations and show that like we really need more innovative approaches in drug design. And we need to probably do a better job of working interprofessionally. So drug development or pharma, working closely with those in clinical practice, working closely with microbiologists and physicians and pharmacists, and really everybody in the field, because it truly does take a village. And we need to be on top of predicting these new mechanism of resistance because no drug is perfect. And there's often resistance seen to antibiotics before they're even commercially available. So it's hard. It's hard to answer that because there's so many different factors, whether it comes from like drug development, along with just testing and understanding these resistance and doing gene sequencing. So yeah, it's almost kind of depressing so that we don't have all the fancy tools that we'd like to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I know, so you also mentioned in your article that you talk about cefepime, zitobactam, and meslinum. Maybe can you talk a little bit more about those?
Yeah, so I guess we'll do a 180 here away from the depressing of we don't have enough drugs to some of the drugs that are coming out are either in development or commercially available right now. So there's meslinam or the oral prodrug is pivmeslinam. So this is a beta-lactam that inhibits PBP2, and it's actually been widely used overseas for the treatment of urinary tract infections. So this is nothing crazy new, but it was recently approved, by the FDA for use of urinary tract infections uncomplicated, but it's generally active against most beta-lactamase producing Enterobacterales bacteria, those including NDM enzymes. So more to come on this. And then there's also cefepime zitabactam. So zitabactam is a beta-lactamase inhibitor. So this kind of serves as a dual role as both your broad spectrum inhibitor of a serine beta-lactamase. In addition, it has that beta-lactam enhancer due to its complementary inhibition of PBP2. So cefepime zitabactam is highly active in vitro against NDM-producing E. coli that harbor that PBP insert variant. But there's, some ongoing discussion about resistance to this drug as well. And then you also have durlobactam. So this is another broad-spectrum beta-lactamase inhibitor. Similar activity against NDM producing E. coli bacteria with PBP inserts, but whether it has that enhancer, which is similar effects to zitabactam, is pretty unknown. But those are just a few potential options. Again, there are already some reports of resistance, even with our newer agents, so showing the challenges with NDM organisms and the call for additional research.
Definitely you start seeing a lot, and you get one drug out there and then all of a sudden you see resistant, and now it's combined, right, with you see, like, very classic, with the beta-lactam and then beta-lactamase inhibitor combinations. Like, drug starts, having a lot of resistance, and then now you put it with something. By the way, and I don't know, I haven't looked into it, so I'm not, but I remember I saw something that that maybe the NID week, maybe I read something about now doing some testing with, like, cefiderocol combined, right, with a beta-lactamase inhibitor.
Yeah, it seems like everyone is trying to combine what we have with some sort of beta-lactam inhibitor as well.
Yeah, and then I don't know if before we kind of start closing, but and as I mentioned earlier, like, I was doing a project on this, and I don't know if you have any thoughts or but from what it looks, right, so definitely not many, antimicrobials are being developed, and, right, many reasons, I think, sometimes maybe from a financial standpoint compared to other drugs that are more of a chronic use. I don't know if you have any thoughts of that, about why is it so challenging, or why, we don't, not enough are developed. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you kind of highlighted a key piece there is that the financial gain really isn't there when it comes to antibiotics, which is kind of sad that that there isn't that motivation. Like, that's what's kind of driving this, seems like money. So how do we get, everybody on board that one, this is important and we need new drugs, and then two, making sure that they do have some sort of financial gain. That way, it encourages them to continue to go into drug research and like look into more of this rather than they create one antibiotic, it goes generic, and now they're, not making any money off of that, where they kind of shift gears and go into other disease states where they can create medications for. So I don't know, there was some a lot of good discussion during ID Week regarding this exact issue of highlighting the need for drug development. How do we get, industry and different partners more on board, where we're all working together to, raise awareness that we need these new fancy tools, and they need to be thought of like well, not just kind of thrown together. So I don't know the answer to it, but I'm glad that people are at least talking about it right now.
Yeah, and you can kind of, yeah, see it. I mean, especially if let's say, typically the person following their instructions, right, and maybe what they take an antibiotic for 7 to 10 days, and compared to going back to that drug that will definitely have that financial gain, because the patient might be potentially in it for life. Something definitely to think about. So as we come to a close, is there anything else that you want to add or talk about?
I think there's two things that I'd like to just add on here. So one, it's important to know that what we've discussed today is very specific to E. coli. So highlighting that, because Pseudomonas is a completely different beast. So if you have an NDM Pseudomonas, it really is a completely different discussion that, needs to be had, where Pseudomonas carry so many other mechanisms of resistance, where Some of these drugs, may not work for you. And then also, I think it's important just to, one, know your patient. That's always my go-to advice for clinicians. It's, know your patient. So that means getting an accurate history to know what exposures they may or may not have. What are the NDM rates from, where they're from? Were they exposed to healthcare in another country? And if you're working at a large referral center, these are questions that you should be asking. And if they need empiric coverage for MDM, so not everybody that, has traveled from, another country or has immigrated, has been exposed to NDM. So we need to think through these questions very carefully. And if they do have high risk factors, are you going to empirically cover them for NDM if they're, septic, if they're sick? And what are you going to use? So all that comes down to knowing your patient. And also, if they are growing NDM, then where are they growing it from? So I've been involved with a few NDM cases, and one of them was, a urine culture that I was growing in where the patient wasn't symptomatic, but we get all excited and scared because it's an NDM producing organism, but the patient didn't have symptoms for a urinary tract infection. So you probably don't need to treat it. Like, it wouldn't, be any different from our normal, guideline recommendations. So knowing where it's growing to is very important, and if it's actually a pathogen that's impacting the patient. And then lastly, my biggest advice is to always work with your micro lab because they are the best. But they, yeah, every case that I've been involved in, the micro lab is always on top of things, testing different drugs, combinations. They go above and beyond. So yeah, the micro lab is the best. So I appreciate everything that you guys do, but we really need to work together to provide the highest level of patient care.
I, completely agree, and thank you for that. I always like to, it's always nice, and I always like to highlight it when unfortunately in the lab sometimes, we tend to hear a lot of the negative, right? Why is my culture taking so long, or why is this, or why are you, this susceptibility is not done yet, and so it's definitely great when you hear things like that, and
Yes, you guys are the best. So we could not do our job without you guys, especially when it comes to these crazy resistant organisms where I'm like, I don't know, can you test this? Can you test that? And they're doing nuanced things. So yes, we appreciate you.
thank you. See, and yeah, to all of those of you out there that you're listening, if if ever, just stop by the lab. And sometimes, it's good. We do tend to, like in my lab, we tend to have a lot of we get like pharmacy residents and people just, rotating around, so they get to spend some time with us, see some culture, see the testing that we're doing. So definitely, if you're out there, stop by the lab and have a talk with your microbiologist. So I have to say that this has been so great. As I said earlier, I enjoyed the article, and I definitely have enjoyed talking to you. So, thank you so much for taking the time to be in Let's Talk Micro.
Of course, thank you.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about this NDM5 variant. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Last week I came back from a little bit of a break, with where before some older episodes have been reposted, and there was 1 week without an episode. Definitely very happy to be back. If you haven't checked out the episode about glycopeptides, definitely go ahead and check it out. But I'll continue working to bring more content to you. Thank you so much for the support. So please continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.